Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, a proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce that farmers can't sell, as well as nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org. Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. As legislators return to Montpelier today to begin a new legislative session, so too do numerous advocates for social, economic, and environmental justice, who will be regulars at the State House over the next few months, making their case to and advancing their goals. Today, we'll have a roundtable with leaders from some of Vermont's leading advocacy groups to hear about their priorities for the new legislative session and how they plan to achieve their goals. In the first half hour, we're going to be joined by Dan Barlow, the policy manager for Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, Paul Burns, the executive director of Vermont Public Interest Research Group, or VPIRG, and Lauren Hurl, the executive director of Vermont Conservation Voters. In the second half hour of our show, we'll be joined by Kate Logan, who is the director of programming and policy for Rights and Democracy in Vermont, and James Lyle, the executive director of the ACLU of Vermont. So let's kick it off with Dan Barlow, the policy manager for Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. Dan, first just tell us what this first day is like for everybody there, and then let's dive into what VBSR is going to be, what their priorities are for the new session.
Sure. Happy to be here, David. And, you know, the first day of the legislative kind of like the first day of school for a lot of people. You know, you're returning a lot of new people.
Dan, you're kind of breaking up there, and I wonder if you might be getting a better location where the signal is going to be a little bit stronger. Not sure where you're located in there. So while you maybe relocate or perhaps call back in, let me move right along to Paul Burns from VPIRG. Paul, tell us what VPIRG is going to be focusing on.
Well, thanks for having me on, David. It's a busy day up in the legislature, and I've had a chance to see most of the guests that you're having on the program today, so it's great. VPIRG is going to be working on a broad range of issues. We have priorities in the area of clean energy and climate change, for instance. We think it's time for the state, if we're serious about moving forward with clean energy, to put a ban on the development of new fossil fuel infrastructure, for instance. And we'll be very anxious to see a new independent report that will be coming out next week by the Joint Fiscal Office of the state, which is going to look at a number of different ways of attacking the problem of carbon emissions, including putting a price on carbon. And they'll I think come up with some interesting ideas, and we'll see from that study what might work best for Vermont. Again, helping our policymakers to move forward in a way that not only addresses climate change but does it in a way that helps our economy and looks out for the interests of those who can least afford some of the challenges of climate change or any challenges to the economy as well. So those are some big areas that we're working on in the area of energy and climate. We're an organization that works on environmental protection and government reform issues, too. And I would say in government reform, last year we came close to seeing a ban on corporate contributions to candidates pass. It got out of the Senate, but didn't make it through the House. And I expect that that will be coming back again this year. As you probably know, the federal government has banned corporate contributions to candidates for over 100 years, and we think it's time for Vermont to join the 22 other states that already have that kind of restriction in place.
Explain, Paul, when we talk about ban on corporate contributions, we know there's a variety of ways that, you know, there are PACs, there are corporate contributions, there are individual contributions. So what exactly will you be targeting?
The legislation that came out of the Senate last year was one that said, unless you are a human being, a political party, or a political committee, or otherwise known as a political action committee, then you cannot give contributions to political candidates. And again, that's pretty closely aligned with what the federal government does or what other states do. Now, a corporation then could not give, whether it's a large corporation like ExxonMobil or a smaller mom-and-pop corporate entity or even a nonprofit corporation, none of them could give directly to candidates. They could potentially set up a political action committee, but at the federal level, political action committees are not allowed to get their money from the corporate treasury. Instead, they must get their money from officers or shareholders of the business. And so it's not like it's the same corporate dollars that would otherwise come from the corporation and go directly to a candidate. So political action committees, the way they're set up, are actually a better way, a better process to have contributions go to candidates, a little bit less directly from the corporation. So we think that's good. We also think that that political action committees in Vermont should have some requirement that they carry the name of the corporation if it is in fact a corporate PAC. So it couldn't be the Puppies and Rainbow PAC if it was really ExxonMobil's PAC. It would have to have the name of the corporation in it, and that at least helps people to understand who's funding candidates.
Let's swing back over to Dan Barlow, who I think we have back on the line from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. Dan, you were just starting to say what VBSR's legislative priorities are going to be for this new session.
Sure. Thanks, David. And you can hear me fine.
Yes,
now?
That sounds much better.
Great, great. You know, one of the big issues we'll be working on this year is raising the minimum wage. I'm sure you remember the House and Senate passed a bill raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour by the year 2024 last year. Unfortunately, the governor vetoed that bill. You know, now coming into this new session, obviously with a veto-proof majority in the House and Senate for the Democrats, that gives a path to victory if the governor does not come to the table to negotiate. Now, this is an issue that VBSR has worked on for a long time. A raise to $15 an hour over the next couple of years would mean a pay raise for, you know, tens of thousands of hardworking Vermonters right now who are, you know, making roughly about $20,000 a year, which we know is just not a way to raise a family or, you know, pay for a life here in Vermont. So we think this is an important economic justice issue, and we think the bill the legislature passed last year is a bill that does raise the wage on a timeline that's going to work for small businesses right now who do want to give their employees more money.
Hmm. What are some of the other issues VBSR is going to be focused on?
Sure. You know, Paul was just talking about carbon pricing. That's something we're also very interested in. I'll be watching for the JFO report next year. You know, we know that
next week.
next week. I'm sorry. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Still in 2018 a little bit. So the JFO report next week, we know that, you know, global climate change is not only a threat to our environment, it's a threat to our economy. And it's really a threat to the Vermont way of life. We look at iconic industries we have in here in Vermont, from, you know, the maple industry to dairy to the winter recreation industry. These are all threatened by climate change, and Vermont needs to lead because you know, we know there's no leadership on this issue coming from the White House in Washington D.C. right now. So we want to put a price on carbon pollution, use that money to help out low income and moderate income Vermonters, and build that bridge off of fossil fuels for our economy.
Talk a little bit about paid family leave and refresh view listeners' memories about what happened and where it stands.
Sure. That's a bill that's actually quite similar to the minimum wage situation. Passed by the House and Senate last year, vetoed by the governor. This would have set up a new insurance system on the state level, funded by a very, very small payroll tax on the employee side, so not the employer side. And this would have allowed Vermonters who, are struggling with an illness or maybe with a family member's illness or the birth of a new baby to take some paid time off to deal with those issues. Right now, there's many, many Vermonters who have no safety net when it comes to, taking time off for the birth of a new child or if a parent gets really sick. This is a safety net issue and also an economic justice issue. And, that bill, again, we hope that the governor comes to the table now, recognizing that the legislature has a path to pass this bill without him having a role here, and we hope that's a motivation for him to come to the table and negotiate.
Hmm. Well, Lauren Hurl, the Executive Director of Vermont Conservation Voters, what's top of your list in this session?
We will also be working closely on the climate action bills that Paul and Dan have described. A couple others that haven't come up yet. We're going to be pushing to finally get over the finish line with a long-term funding plan for clean water. This is something that the legislature and administration have kicked the can down the road for a number of years. And if we're really going to get serious about investing in the projects and the work that needs to get done to clean up Lake Champlain and waters across the state, we need to make that long-term investment. So that's something we're going to be working closely on.
Help people to understand what's happened with clean water funding so far and what you're trying to do this session.
Yeah, absolutely. So back in 2015, the Vermont Clean Water Act was passed, and it set out a whole kind of framework for how to better regulate pollution going into our waters. And at that point, they set up a small funding pool and said, we're going to solve this problem another year. We're taking on all these issues. And the treasurer of Vermont, Beth Pierce, did a great report with a ton of input from Vermonters all over the state. And she basically came out saying, we need $25 million a year in new funding in order to achieve the clean water obligations that we have. And, she made a great case of how critical clean water is to our tourism economy, our way of life, our health. And so basically the last couple of years, they've taken little nibbles at it. Last year, the legislature did put the unclaimed nickels from the bottle bill, so those bottles that you don't return, that money will now go into a clean water fund. In the past, it had just gone back to beverage corporations. So they've been nibbling at the edges, but we need to really get to that $25 million a year target. So that's what we're going to be pushing for this year.
Is there concern that the Trump EPA may take their foot off the gas on the pressure that's on Vermont to clean up Lake Champlain?
Fortunately, from every person in a leadership post in the state of Vermont has essentially said, we haven't heard that happen, but even if that did happen, that this is something we need to invest in for Vermont. It is so central to, our economy, our way of life. Tourism is so critical. As we're seeing reports of closed beaches and other things, that's going to be such a hit to Vermont that I think everybody recognizes, EPA hammer or not, this is something we just need to do. So we're seeing a lot of consensus from leadership, and it's just figuring out how we do that, because raising money is always hard. But I do hear a commitment that, EPA or not, we need to do this.
What else is on Vermont Conservation Voters' priority list?
Yeah, we are looking at, there were two bills that we worked on closely with VPIRG and some other partners last year that were looking at trying to help reduce Vermonters' exposure to toxic chemicals. And so, a lot of work's been done since the PFOA contamination was discovered down in Bennington and has since been discovered, really it's popping up all over the country. And how are we holding toxic polluters accountable for the harm that those chemicals are causing people, harm to their health, medical testing people need to go through, property damage, lost value of your property and other things. So there was a bill that we worked on last year that that passed the legislature, but unfortunately was vetoed by Governor Scott. You're hearing a theme today that would have made corporations pay for medical monitoring if a person could show that they were contaminated, their body's been contaminated by a toxic chemical from something like an industrial plant nearby. And also in the toxics realm, there was a bill to make it easier to identify where toxic chemicals are being used in children's products sold in Vermont and make the process a little bit easier for the Commissioner of Health to actually restrict the use so that parents aren't having to try to shop around for safer products, but that we're actually getting these dangerous chemicals out of our kids' products altogether. Another bill that passed the legislature was vetoed by the governor. We were just 4 votes shy of an override last year, so we're hopeful with the new legislative makeup that we could actually get that over the finish line this year.
Dan Barlow, we've heard a theme from you, Paul Burns, and Lauren Hurl about vetoes of key pieces of legislation that each of your groups, BBSR, VPIRG, and Vermont Conservation Voters, has advanced. There is a new dynamic now at work, a veto-proof majority in the House of Representatives. How's that going to change things?
Sure. You know, this for us was a kind of a big game changer, knowing that the House and the Senate both have veto-proof majorities this year. You know, the House increased their majority in the past election. We saw, you know, a record number of bills vetoed by the governor last year. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for the governor, and we have members who have a lot of respect for the governor. But there is a sense within the building that the governor wasn't always, the governor or the governor's people weren't always at the negotiating table on some of these bills. So we hope that recognizing that they can pass legislation without him at this point, that is a motivator for the governor to come to the table with his ideas so we can improve this legislation and have bills that can actually, you know, be approved by the legislature and the governor and signed into law. So I really hope this changes the dynamics, and this is a motivation for the governor to begin talking to the legislature about these issues.
With some of the bills that were vetoed, minimum wage, paid family leave, the toxics bill, which do you think has the greatest likelihood right off the bat of seeing, being successfully implemented, passed and not vetoed, or vetoed and overridden?
Sure. You know, I hope Governor Phil Scott, you know, looks to our South and finds some motivation from the Massachusetts governor, you know, who last year did sign compromise bills on minimum wage and paid family leave. You know, is seen as a leader within the party nationally, you know, outside of the Trump part of the party. So, you know, I think there are some models for him to look at. You know, I'm hopeful that things like minimum wage and paid family leave, which, you know, are very common sense economic justice ideas, that he'll recognize that there are benefits there.
Paul Burns, you're the PIRGs work in every state. What do you see when you look to, you know, Governor Scott has mentioned that he looks to Massachusetts and the Massachusetts governor, another, you know, kind of moderate Republican such as him, and the grand bargain that was struck in Massachusetts. What do you see as kind of maybe a hope for Vermont for changing the political dynamic here, where we, you know, so many things ended in vetoes last year?
Well, Massachusetts is a state that has a political makeup that is somewhat similar to Vermont's, in that their legislature is dominated heavily by Democrats, and we both have Republican governors. And so I think, as Dan mentioned, that there may be a chance that Governor Scott looks to Governor Baker for some signals on how he might move forward effectively working with the legislature. And that's really what you referenced, the grand bargain, and what Dan Barlow was talking about in the passage of those economic justice bills and proposals there. It was done when everybody could get around the table and have conversation, and certainly everyone compromised somewhat. But that's a very different method of conducting business, I guess you could say, than what we've seen from Governor Phil Scott in Vermont recently. The last two legislative sessions, we've seen him come in with, you know, quite controversial plans about education funding and healthcare and education in the final, literally the final days and hours of the legislative session. I don't think with the new legislative makeup and the increased number of seats for Democrats and progressives, for instance, in the House of Representatives, that you will see the governor here behaving in that way. I agree that it's much more likely that we will see some sort of better communication and improved process on any number of issues. It doesn't mean that the legislature won't send things to the governor that he believes he cannot sign and may indeed veto. And then we'll see, you know, what happens there. But just because the Democrats have increased numbers doesn't also mean that they can simply override him on anything. I think we all understand that the Democratic Party in Vermont is made up of a pretty wide spectrum of political beliefs. And so there will be some compromise involved in the process even to get or to keep, you know, 100 Democrats, progressives, and independents aligned so that they might override the governor should that be necessary. But I think, you know, at this first day of the session, everybody has still some sense that, that maybe they can work together a little bit more effectively this year.
And for you, Paul, what is kind of the low-hanging fruit that you feel you're going to have the most success with getting passed early on?
Yeah, you know, you ask about some of those bills that have been vetoed. There was the one, I think, that Lauren mentioned that was dealing with toxic chemicals in children's products. We were all surprised that Governor Scott vetoed that last year. And it's true that the House came within four votes of overriding his veto. So I think that there's every indication that that will be moving rapidly out of the Senate and hopefully out of the House and to the governor's desk. And maybe he can read the writing on the wall or, you know, count to 100 and recognize that he will be overridden if he doesn't pass that. But I expect that that will be something that can move pretty quickly, and we certainly hope that it will. But some issues that we haven't talked about so far, for instance, we're seeing a lot of movement around the state of people interested and concerned about how we are kind of drowning in plastic, single-use plastics, bags and bottles and straws and glitter and, you know, all this stuff that you use for 2 or 3 or 5 minutes that hangs around the planet for 500 years or more. And so we're seeing communities from Brattleboro to Montpelier to Burlington, Middlebury, all and Bennington, all looking at taking action here. And I really think that a number of state legislators are stepping forward to say that we need to do something about single-use plastics in Vermont as well, to ban this stuff if we can and look for ways to promote alternatives. And I think that's something that that we'll see the legislature take up this year, too.
Lauren Hurl from Vermont Conservation Voters. Explain what Vermont Conservation Voters is.
Yeah, thanks. We're an organization. We work first and foremost to try to elect pro-environment lawmakers. So we endorse candidates. We actively work during election season. We have, earlier Paul referenced political action committees. We have a political action committee so that we can support candidates. We knock on doors. We send postcards. We do the whole slew of things trying to get candidates elected. And then we try to work then with the new crop of legislators to advocate for strong pro-environment laws and then hold lawmakers accountable through things like our environmental scorecard and then again at the ballot box when it's time for re-election. So that's the core of our mission.
And since we have three of you and three of these organizations represented, Lauren, talk about how do the advocates work? What is the scene for listeners who've never been to the State House? You've got the legislators in the well of the House, in the committee rooms. Where are you doing your work?
Yeah, we're doing our work. So first of all, the organizations on today's call, you know, a lot of us work on overlapping issues and work in coalitions and really try to put forward, you know, places where we have shared values and goals and collaborate and tap into different kind of areas of expertise and different memberships and so on. So we'll do a lot of pre-work before we even get to the legislative session. And then in the building, you know, I was struck this morning walking in and seeing it seemed like we were drowning in corporate lobbyists. And it was just a good reminder of, oh, yeah, like those of us who are fighting on the side of things like clean water and action on climate, it's a tough road for anything we're trying to do. But we're able to be successful by, you know, working in the committee rooms, testifying, getting really the importance of voters and constituents calling and engaged in the process so that lawmakers know if they're going to take what feels like a tough vote because of all the corporate lobbyists that they have backing from their from Vermonters, which all of our stuff they typically do, but it can feel hard because of all the in the building pressure from the corporate lobbyists.
Dan Barlow, how does VBSR keep its head above water with the corporate money and corporate lobbyists that you're going up against?
That's constantly kind of a source of frustration for me. I think we're lucky that we have a legislature that recognizes, when local businesses are coming to the table to talk about policy issues as opposed to corporations that are owned outside of Vermont or are kind of parachuting in when there are hot policy issues. So we're really lucky that our legislature, they want to hear from, the person down the street who runs their general store. They don't really necessarily want to hear from, a corporate lobbyist representing, ExxonMobil. That often allows us to have access to the legislature in a way that people from outside of the state struggle with sometimes. We are a small state, and generally the legislature knows the people they're talking to, and that's very effective. So for VBSR, we are on the right side of issues, and we come to the table with data and stories and arguments that resonate with a legislature that wants to take action on important issues.
Okay, well, that's going to wrap up our first half hour. I want to thank Dan Barlow from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, Paul Burns from the Vermont Public Interest Research Group, and Lauren Hurl from the Vermont Conservation Voters. Thanks to all of you for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks,
David.
We're going to take a short break for the news, and we'll be back after the break with Kate Logan, who's the Director of Programming and Policy for Rights and Democracy Vermont, and James Lyle, the Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union in Vermont. I'm David Goodman. You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. Stay tuned.